separated for more than 60 years are briefly reunited. We'll hear the co-founder of the National Campaign to End the Korean War. And at 11 on Between the Covers, we speak with T. Geronimo Johnson about his novel, Welcome to Braggsville. And at 11:30, the film show honors Future Day as envisioned in Back to the Future Part 2 with a classic 2011 K-Boo conversation with actor, author, and independent filmmaker Crispin Glover. That's all coming up after Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary right up next on K-Boo. Thank you, K-Boo members. Your support keeps this station operating. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Health Club's Body Positive Block Party, Thursday, October 22nd at Health Club in Portland. The Body Positive Block Party is an inaugural bash for Portland's first body positive, worker-owned, community-centered barbell gym. Again, that's the Body Positive Block Party on Thursday, October 22nd, 7 p.m. at Health Club, 1235 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, October 22nd, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. And today's guest, Robert Lundahl, is back with us, the filmmaker who has produced the most extraordinary film. It's an example of what storytelling looks like. Who Are My People is the name of the film. We're right now pulling out all the stops to try to bring this film and Robert to Portland so that here we can see what things look like on the ground, take those experiences and map them into territories here in Cascadia, where similar events are taking place and have been for many, many years. That, of course, being treaties, signatories to treaties, those who have refused to sign treaties, as in the case of the Nez Perce people, still fighting to defend their river system and their river life. And learning from the situation right now in the Mojave Desert, where once again, we are treated to the spectacle of, in this case, the corporations or the colonialists. And their idea is that the Mojave Desert is empty. Now comes some truths that are a little bit uncomfortable for the huge solar array corporations who want to site their operations in the Mojave on sacred, on ancestral ground. When you come right down to it, all land in North America is First Nations land, some of it sacred, some of it land nonetheless. Funny, isn't it, though, that conservation groups and local activists who have long said that the massive solar farms hurt the desert, and they are fond of citing at-risk species such as desert tortoises and bighorn sheep. Well, yeah, let's have tortoises and bighorn sheep, but let's not forget there are people there, too. And the people would like to have access to their own lands and be left to live their lives in their own ways, in their own traditional ways, on their own land. They, too, are a species that deserves preservation. And in fact, in the tribal view of the cosmos, it's all one. They are part of the land. The land is part of them. I spoke to Robert this morning. The idea of taking part of the land away, taking a species away, is the same as, well, let's cut off an arm. It is part of the body of these people, the people who live there. It is their land, regardless of any treaties. There have been developments recently which may be instrumental, may be helpful going forward to preserve, in the interest in the name of preserving the land in the Mojave for the people who really the ownership part of the whole equation is ownership simply by being an extension of the land itself. Now, you have to see the film to really get this, to really hear elders speaking to the issue. And I want to welcome Robert back to the KBOO airwaves to talk some more about the recent developments. Yes, it's terrific. We're going to take care of tortoises and sheep and so forth. But, you know, there's some people that live here too. And the tortoises, the sheep, the land, all of it is one in their view, in their worldview. Good morning, Robert. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Chris. It's my pleasure, and I'm really happy to be having this ongoing conversation with you and all your listeners, because these are really important issues, and they go far beyond the Mojave, of course.
Yeah, they do. So, because they of course, they go, yes, they do indeed go beyond the Mojave, because, yes, the Mojave is First Nations land, as is the rest of the land in North America. And the growing awareness of that fact is perhaps the only thing that will save us from ourselves in the end.
Well, I think when we look at how these projects were developed, it's typical in some ways. I mean, we have had lots of examples of energy projects being developed in different areas. But what I've come to as a conclusion over 4 years is that there's rather a systematic attempt to disregard not only tortoise and bighorn sheep and kit fox and people, but to take apart and dissemble Native American sovereignty and, by extension, treaty rights. And this is extremely disturbing right now.
Can you discuss a little bit more about the treaty rights and how that affects the story as we go forward? Because this is the treaty rights, and as well as the impact of these solar arrays that they want to site in the Mojave. What happened? Why is the land not protected under these
like
rights?
I said, the Mojave is very dry, and they had military exercises there in World War II, but the whole area has been pretty much forgotten since then. You know, if you're not a rock hound or a prospector or, you know, a bird watcher, or you don't like hiking in 120-degree heat, it's a difficult place to gain access to. And so the tribal antiquities have been preserved there and kept quiet since about 1946, and they're held in trust by the Bureau of Land Management. There are no treaties. They've just been kept quiet. But lately, I received a call from Pat Brock, who is an elder with Lakota. Well, she's an elder advisor to the Lakota peoples. She's Yankton Sioux. And her role is to advise on tribal historic properties. And the TRHPO, T-R-H-O, and tribal historic properties officer. And that group of cultural resource people comes in advance of any development on federal land to consult by law. And there is a large project going in involving 8 Sioux tribes, which is known as Sioux Wind. And the proposal, which has been put forth by high-ranking people in the Democratic establishment and also by the corporations, is to establish this mega corporation in which the tribes are participants. Well, of course, if you're in a corporation, if the Lakota people are in a corporation relative to wind development, then there go the treaty rights. So I've seen the systemic disregard of, species, and the fact that the Mojave sinks tremendous amounts of carbon and it's tremendously biodiverse, and we're supposedly doing this to mitigate atmospheric carbon, blah, blah, blah. But really, I mean, they just want to get a time to get the money. And so here in the case of Sioux Wind, it's like, let's just form a corporation, you Native people, and you'll be better off, you'll make lots of money, you'll gain some employment. But according to Pat, it is at the expense of the treaty rights and their inherent rights as a nation, which predated any treaty. You know, treaties don't confer rights. You know, the people were there. And the federal government came to them in the treaty in the 1840s and said, we want to get our caravans here to the gold fields. You know, let's make peace. But the Sioux nations were there, and they said, well, we are not warlike people. We're peaceful people, so we'll sign your treaty, whatever that means. But the rights are inherent, and Pat speaks about the power of the non-treaty signers as well, meaning the women. You know, women didn't sign those treaties. So the power of being in the land, as you say, is inherent and almost cellular, and the land is a part of the people. The people are a part of the land. And so we devise all these funny ways to carve it all up and make business out of it. But it doesn't do the tribal people any good or provide any benefits.
Have you heard from any of your sources there in the Mojave and some of this land, have you heard what their response is to the notion that conservation... See, the conservation groups and local activists, the same thing all over again, that yeah. Hooray for the tortoises and hooray for the sheep. Well, what about hooray for the Sioux Nation and the people who live there? I'm still waiting to see how their rights are being managed, and the very fact that any of this should be managed by anyone other than the indigenous people is kind of an outrage to me. And I'm not even an indigenous person, but I find it enraging that it goes on in this beautiful place, which is sacred, as you pointed out, and across the country, where we see this happening again and again. Look at the Dakotas, where the Bakken shale is. That's the tribal presence in the Dakotas has been powerful for a very, very long time. Going back to the days when buffalo were, you know, thick all the way to the horizon and then completely wiped out. We have seemed not to have learned very much from our experiences. So when you ask the question, who are my people, how did you come up with the title? What's the significance of that title to you personally?
When I add the title of the film to something we say about the film, it makes a little more sense to me right now, and that's what I'm thinking. You know, when green is not sustainable, who are my people? I mean, the responsibility is not on the tribes to sort this out. The responsibility is on the dominant society. It's on us. So who are my people if we're going to pretend, you know, that we are providing green solutions that are not green? I mean, the companies that were involved, that are involved in the desert, are Chevron, Florida Power and Light, which is a fossil fuel natural gas provider. El Paso Natural Gas sends gas into the Mojave to supplement these plants. The Carlyle Group, remember them?
Of course.
Well, their subsidiary or partner, Riverstone Partners, and then their contract agency, Pattern Energy, built 128 wind turbines on a Native American sacred graveyard.
And these are very large. I mean, it's hard to, unless you've seen them, we sometimes drive out to Eastern Oregon and see these things. These are absolutely enormous, and simply maintaining the turbines requires an enormous human presence on land that is certainly not anything like compatible to life for people, creatures other than those that have co-evolved with that land. So bang, 128 turbines takes up an enormous amount of space.
That wasn't one of the large ones. I mean, with the solar, we're talking about 5 to 10 square miles of land, and then that land is graded. So it's great. You know, it's turned into a parking lot. And the NGOs went right along with it. So there you have an Israeli company, Bright Source. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Is the attorney for their investment group, Venture Partners. The Kennedys put Obama in office. This was, you know, the key stone centerpiece of Obama's green jobs, renewable energy programs. And so then what do the NGOs do? Well, NRDC, Sierra Club, and others say, hey, it's okay. You can displace desert tortoise, and we'll just make more desert tortoise habitat. You know, what are they talking about?
Robert, that's it. That's a good question. That's where we have to end it. What are they exactly? What are they talking about? These are enormous NGOs, environmental groups that we've come to trust over the years, and it would certainly be a good idea to take a longer, harder look at some of these organizations and figure out where the money comes from and actually where it's going, because it is tracing that pattern that is going to reveal some very surprising facts for a lot of people. And the film, Who Are My People, what the question is, and that's what we should be considering right now, because it's definitely has implications here in Cascadia and across the country, all of it being Indigenous when you get right down to it. Again, my guest has been Robert Lundell. Thank you so much. The filmmaker made Who Are My People, made Song on the Water, has made films that are stories, a tribute to Indigenous peoples, and powerful statements of the actual